Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020. Coming up this hour.
The UK becomes the first Western country to approve a coronavirus vaccine.
Rising infections in the U.S. put a strain on hospitals across the country.
And when it comes to trade policy, Joe Biden says he will leave the Phase 1 deal with China intact.
President Trump has been accused by a GOP official of inspiring threats of violence. Plus, a pro-democracy activist in Hong Kong has been sentenced. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Ravens and Steelers will finally play today, and we'll hear from Kevin Durant as he nears his Nets debut.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Hey, good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And U.S. stock index futures are lower to start the day. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down about 7 points. Dow futures down 103, and NASDAQ futures down 9. The DAX in Germany is down 0.33%. The CAC in Paris down 0.2%. And the FTSE 100 is higher, up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 0.92%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.16%. NYMEX crude oil, little change, down 2 cents at $44.53 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.5% or $9.60 at $18.28.60 an ounce. Nathan.
Well, Karen, we begin this morning in the UK, where regulators have approved a COVID vaccine from Pfizer and BioNTech. It's the first Western country to approve a shot. The U.S. is expected to do the same next week after a further review of the data. We get more from Bloomberg Intelligence pharmaceutical analyst Sam Fazeli.
When the FDA meets, we will be able to see much more detail of that data, which is one of the nice things about the regulatory process in the US. They do have public open forums where experts discuss the data, companies present it, and they question the companies.
The UK approval clears the way for vaccines to be administered in Britain as soon as next week.
When it comes to U.S. distribution of a shot, healthcare workers and those in long-term care will be first in line. That's according to key government advisors at the CDC. After that, Dr. Anthony Fauci expects the U.S. to reach herd immunity sometime in the summer.
Healthcare providers and individuals in nursing homes and other high-priority individuals will start getting it in December. As you get into January, February, or March, you will then get the second, third, and fourth level of people.
The U.S. has 21 million healthcare workers and 3 million nursing home residents. All are expected to be vaccinated within weeks of a shot's approval. The overwhelming majority of Americans could be vaccinated by the second quarter of next year, leading to herd immunity in the summer and a return to school and work in the fall, said Anthony Fauci, the U.S. government's top infectious disease doctor.
In the meantime, the FDA has cleared a new antibody test from Roche. The test identifies antibodies tied to COVID's distinctive spike protein, which has been a target for several of the leading vaccines. Roche says the test could be used to evaluate how well the shots work.
Across the country, rising infections are putting a strain on hospitals. Deaths in New Jersey hit the highest level in 6 months. Hospitalizations reached a new high in San Francisco. Texas reported a record day for new cases. And hospitalizations in New York jumped the most since April. That has New York City Health Commissioner David Chosky issuing a warning to residents.
That means stopping non-essential activities, staying in as much as possible, and avoiding social activities outside of your household.
Hospitalizations in New York City have doubled in recent weeks. They now sit at the highest level since June.
Well, as the virus surges, President-elect Joe Biden is getting close to naming his top health officials. Sources tell us his frontrunner for health secretary is New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. He's also considering former Surgeon General Vivek Murthy for the post. Biden could announce his picks as soon as next week.
At the same time, we're getting insight into the president-elect's policy on trade. Joe Biden won't quickly end President Trump's Phase 1 deal with China. First, he tells the New York Times he wants to conduct a review of U.S. policy with Beijing, and that includes consulting with allies. We get more from Bloomberg's Michelle Jamrisco.
He's hammering this point about talking with allies first. That he's trying to reiterate this multilateral strategy, draw a sharp contrast with his would-be predecessor, and really talk about building up U.S. capabilities rather than just tearing China down.
Overall, Biden says he won't make any immediate moves on tariffs imposed under President Trump.
While he won't act quickly on trade, Biden is promising swift action on the economy. The president-elect unveiled his economic team yesterday, saying their first priority will be passing a new stimulus package.
My transition team is already working on what I'll put forward in the next Congress to address the multiple crises we're facing, especially our economic and COVID crises.
At the same time, there's word Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell are making another push to pass bills of their own. Both the House Speaker and Senate Majority Leader are offering fresh proposals for coronavirus relief. At last check, they were far apart on the size of a measure. So far, there are no details on numbers in these latest proposals.
Meantime, at the White House, the issue of pardons is in the news as President Trump prepares to leave office next month. Now prosecutors are investigating whether people trying to purchase pardons from the administration. Here with the latest is Amy Morris from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The unsealed court document shows the Justice Department is investigating what it refers to as a bribery conspiracy, including using intermediaries to deliver the proposed bribe. The document blacked out several names, three individuals suspected of offering political contributions in exchange for a presidential pardon, one of them a lawyer. This, as the New York Times reports, Rudy Giuliani discussed the possibility of receiving a preemptive pardon from President Trump as recently as last week. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks. Amy, turning to corporate news now, we have a big deal in the tech industry. Salesforce has agreed to buy Slack for more than $27 billion. The deal gives Salesforce a popular workplace communications platform. We spoke with CEO Mark Benioff about the acquisition.
It's a marriage made in heaven, and we could not be more excited about this combination and how it transforms our customer 360 vision and lets our customers work from anywhere. Just the most exciting thing I've been through.
Salesforce is paying a 55% premium for Slack. It's the company's largest acquisition ever. It's expected to close by the end of July.
And futures this morning are lower. S&P futures down about 5 points. Dow futures down 90. NASDAQ futures down 8. The 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 0.92%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. It is 5:07 on Wall Street. Now let's get a check of what's been happening in New York and around the world with Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. With COVID-19 hospitalizations climbing, older New Yorkers and people with medical issues are being urged by city officials to limit activities outside their homes. As we mentioned earlier, Mayor Bill de Blasio, along with the city's health commissioner, announced the advisory aimed at those most at risk from the virus. De Blasio says hospitalizations have been rising for weeks with a seasonal surge in infections.
We need you, if you're older, you have pre-existing conditions, to take additional precautions. We need you. We need you to go out and get that flu shot if you haven't done it already.
Meanwhile, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he predicts the number of cases will continue to rise during the holiday period.
Increased social activity increases the viral transmission. The COVID Grinch seizes the opportunity of the holiday season.
In Connecticut, there were more than 1,100 hospitalizations and 20 deaths from the virus. In a long-shot request, Republican allies of President Trump say they have asked the U.S. Supreme Court for an emergency order that would nullify Pennsylvania's certification of Joe Biden's election victory in the state. It comes as Georgia's Secretary of State says online posts with conspiracy theories about the presidential election are putting lives in jeopardy. Gabrielle Sterling says that GOP leaders and President Trump are not dismissing unproven claims about widespread voter fraud.
It has all gone too far.
Midnight is the deadline to complete the latest Georgia recount requested by Republicans. President Trump threatened to veto the annual must-pass defense authorization bill unless congressional leaders include changes to the legal shield that protects tech companies from liability for user consent. The defense policy bill authorizes military pay increases as well as hazard pay for troops in harm's way. Hong Kong activist Joshua Wong was sentenced to more than 13 months in jail for leading a protest outside police headquarters last year. It's one of the most high-profile cases in the government's crackdown on the pro-democracy movement. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries, I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. And only in 2020 moment, people this afternoon will put on NBC, perhaps expecting to watch Ellen, and will instead find an NFL game between the team with the best record, the unbeaten Steelers, and the Ravens, who had the best record a year ago. The game was supposed to be a week ago, postponed three different times due to an outbreak in Baltimore. The Broncos were upset the NFL kept postponing that game, but made them play last Sunday despite having all four of their quarterbacks on the COVID list. They insisted the QBs would soon be cleared to play, and now three of them have been. Another Giants injury, not just quarterback Daniel Jones, but linebacker Kyle Fackrell will miss at least three games with a leg injury. Kevin Durant had a leg injury, hasn't played since his torn Achilles suffered in the 2019 NBA Finals. Looking forward to his return and his debut the Brooklyn Nets.
I've been through surgeries and injuries before, but recovery I had was 3 months, but the first phase of the Achilles was 3 months long, and you can't walk all around while you're in school. So
the season starts in 3 weeks. No schedule out yet, but reportedly the Nets will play the Celtics on Christmas Day. All the talk of the Nets acquiring James Harden from Houston has died down. Durant was said to be pushing for it, but he said yesterday he has not once spoken with Harden about it. Top of the college football playoff rankings unchanged from a week ago. Still Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, then Ohio State has only played four games this season. Notre Dame on track to play Clemson in a rematch in an ACC championship game. Sarah Fuller, who made history last Saturday as a female kicker for Vanderbilt, expected to be Vandy's kicker again this week. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
And John, experts see even more room for expansion for the fast-growing sports betting industry at the Betting on Sports America online conference. Experts said the lure of new tax revenue could prove irresistible to cash-strapped state governments facing large pandemic deficits. And the results of last month's elections, in which voters in a number of states approved allowing or expanding casinos or sports betting, show that demand exists for legalized gambling in even more states. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's donor-advised fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy. Open a JCF fund now to lock in a 2020 tax deduction. Visit jcfny.org.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks fluctuating while U.S. stock index futures edge lower a day after reaching record highs as optimism over coronavirus vaccines wanes. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 5 points. Dow futures down 87. Nasdaq futures down 12. The DAX in Germany is down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 0.92%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.16%. NYMEX crude oil is little change, down a cent at $44.54 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.5% or $9.20 at $18.28.10 an ounce. The euro 1.2059 against the dollar. British pound 1.3352. The yen is at 104.68. And today we are watching for a report on private payrolls from ADP Research Institute. It's out at 8:15 Wall Street time. At 2, the Federal Reserve releases its beige book. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. During an emergency virtual meeting, a group of medical experts that advises the CDC voted to recommend that healthcare personnel and residents of long-term care facilities should be the first people to get a possible COVID-19 vaccine once approved by the FDA. Pfizer says they've won permission for emergency use of their COVID-19 vaccine in Britain. British regulators are also considering other shots made by Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Oxford University. Attorney General William Barr says the Justice Department hasn't uncovered significant voter fraud that would change the outcome of the presidential election, delivering a blow to President Trump's unsubstantiated claims of a rigged vote. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And let's get more now. One of the stories Michael just mentioned, our top story this morning, the UK approving Pfizer and BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine, the first Western country to do so. Sam Fazeli is back with us this morning, senior pharmaceutical analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, a very busy man, I'm sure. And obviously, this has been a very busy timetable when it comes to getting vaccines not just developed, but now approved. I guess the question is it happening too fast?
Good morning. Is it happening too fast? Well, if they had waited 8 more days, I think you would have had an approval from the FDA. So we either have to question whether all the regulators are rushing this, or whether and whether they're cutting corners or not. So my understanding is that all the regulators have been working together since at least June, maybe even earlier, looking at these data and looking at these vaccines, looking at manufacturing processes and working hand in hand with the companies to try and get this to people as fast as possible. I think all that happened here is basically cut out of what, for want of a better phrase, I would say unnecessary red tape, which dogs a lot of other approvals. So my view is that I don't think it's happening too fast. I'm glad that it's happening.
Okay, so as you mentioned, the FDA is due to at least announce its assessment of the data in just about 8 days here. You're thinking that that approval is going to come just as quickly as it has in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, the FDA's advisory committee, which is what it has decided to do, is to call an advisory committee, will meet on December 10th, as we said, and that meeting finishes at about 5 p.m., 6 p.m. U.S. time. The regulator can make a decision right there and then or take a day to do it. So that's all possible. The beauty of what the FDA does, which none of the other regulators regularly do, is that when it has these advisory committees, they are often public, or people can attend them anyway. These vaccine ones for sure are public. You just have to make sure you get on the webcast early enough so they don't hit capacity. So people can see and hear the discourse and the discussion that's going on. And that is why I really like the way the FDA does it, because anyone who wants to listen can listen in and get comfort, hopefully, on what these experts are looking at, what the data in detail look like.
And of course, what's got a lot of people excited about this Pfizer vaccine is that 95% effectiveness announcement that Pfizer came out with a few weeks ago. But of course, one of the challenges is that it has to be kept at ultra low temperatures. So what kind of challenges could be in the offing here once Pfizer does get those final approvals?
Yeah, so just one thing to be clear here, we until a vaccine is in the hands of people, we talk about efficacy as opposed to effectiveness. Unfortunately, the effectiveness of a vaccine depends on how many people take it and several other factors. The efficacy so far, as you rightly say, is the 95% level. So, of course, now the challenge ends up being distributing it, making sure that the manufacturing goes according to plan. You know, lots of things can go wrong. It's a complex process, complicated process, and unfortunately now a lot of people are going to be involved. So whatever number of doses the companies can get to us have to be pushed out to the regions, to different areas. Obviously, the United Kingdom is a slightly smaller place than the United States. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be a lot easier to manage that cold chain, which, of course, is the minus 60, minus 70. So not forget, though, please, that Moderna's coming only a week or so behind. So, and that one is a little less cumbersome, but I don't think this can be the issue that we have to worry about too much.
I'm glad you mentioned the people factor. In our last minute here, what's your feel on the confidence level that people will have in these vaccines?
Yeah, so I'm sure you do the same as I do in terms of talking to friends and family, and you do hear the usual, I'm not sure, I'd rather wait and see when someone else is taking it and see how it goes. So, but I suspect by the time these vaccines come out, the confidence level hopefully will go up. I mean, things can go wrong. We can start seeing reinfections even in vaccinated people because we don't know what the effectiveness of the vaccine is in the real world. But I suspect as the months go by and nothing hopefully goes wrong, more and more people will turn and accept the vaccine.
Thanks again for joining us, Sam. Always great getting your insights. Sam Fazeli is a senior pharmaceutical analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence on the news that the United Kingdom has given approval to the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Looking at shares of Pfizer in the pre-market this morning, they are higher by 3.25%. BioNTech shares in Frankfurt higher by almost 6%. As for the broader market, a little bit of selling this morning for equities. S&P futures are down almost 5 points right now. Dow futures lower by 84. NASDAQ futures a decline of 13 points. And the 10-year Treasury yield, 91 basis points. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer or call 1-800-FIND-4WD for special offers at the Land Rover Season of Adventure sales event now through January 4th. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. The U.K. has become the first Western country to approve a coronavirus vaccine. Regulators have given the okay to shots from Pfizer and BioNTech. The U.S. and EU are expected to do the same in the coming days. We get more from Bloomberg Intelligence pharmaceutical analyst Sam Fazeli.
So the expectation would be that the FDA is within the next 8 to 9 days. And then European Union apparently is going to do it by the 29th of December.
Now, when it comes to U.S. distribution of a shot, healthcare workers and those in long-term care will be first in line. That's according to advisors at the CDC. At the same time, the FDA has cleared a new antibody test from Roche. The test identifies antibodies tied to COVID's distinctive spike protein, which has been a target for several of the leading vaccines.
Tackling the economic impact from the virus will be a top priority for Joe Biden. The president-elect says his pick for Treasury Secretary will be key in shaping the response.
I am really pleased to be able to nominate Janet Yellen. No one is better prepared to deal with these crises.
And while Biden waits to take office, we have word that Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell are making another push to pass a stimulus bill of their own. Both the House Speaker and Senate Majority Leader are offering fresh proposals for coronavirus relief. No word yet on the size of the measures.
Well, Biden plans to act swiftly on stimulus. He won't do the same on trade. The president-elect does not plan to quickly end that phase one deal with China. He tells the New York Times that first he wants to conduct a review of U.S. policy with Beijing, and that includes consulting with key allies. We get more from Bloomberg's Dan Ten Kate.
He's looking basically to form a more comprehensive China strategy and then see how the U.S.-China trade relationship fits into that. A much more comprehensive approach and a clear, you know, departure from the America First policies of Donald Trump.
Overall, Biden says he won't make any immediate moves on tariffs imposed under President Trump.
And in corporate news, we have a big deal in the tech industry. Salesforce has agreed to buy Slack Technologies for more than $27 billion. The deal gives Salesforce a popular workplace communications platform in one of the largest tech acquisitions this year.
S&P futures are lower this morning, down 5 points. Dow futures down 87. NASDAQ futures down 12. The DAX in Germany is down 0.33%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 0.91%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down about 0.2% or 7 cents at $44.48 a barrel. The euro 1.2058 against the dollar. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
Okay, Karen, thank you. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. Now let's bring in Michael Barr for more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. New York City's health commissioner is advising older adults and those most vulnerable to COVID-19 to stay at home. Dr. David Chotsky says those at greatest risk should limit trips outside the home to commuting back and forth from work or school and essential errands like medical appointments, grocery shopping, or pharmacy visits.
I know that some people face a much greater risk for severe illness from COVID-19. This includes people who are older or have underlying health conditions.
Choksi said hospitals in the city reported more than 1,100 COVID-19 patients, twice as many compared to less than 3 weeks ago, and the highest number since early June. Nurses at one of the New York City area's largest healthcare providers say they are working in an unsafe environment. Nurses claim at the Montefiore Hospital in New Rochelle that it is cutting staff and not providing enough PPE to deal with the new influx of COVID-19 patients. Nurses went on strike yesterday, chanting and picketing outside the hospital. Hospital officials claim they've been in negotiations with nursing officials for 18 months. The Staten Island bar that said it was an autonomous zone and would remain open during pandemic restrictions has been shut down by the New York City Sheriff's Department. The co-owner of Max Public House, Danny Presti, refused to leave, and he was arrested last night. Fines were also issued for violating state executive orders, and the bar lost its liquor license. Georgia's Republican voting system manager denounced President Trump and the state's two Republican U.S. senators for not condemning the threats of violence being made against election workers and the state's top elections official. His voice shaking with anger, Gabe Sterling said his boss, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, a Republican, had received death threats along with his wife. Sterling says it has to stop.
Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language. Senators, you have not condemned this language or these actions. This has to stop. We need you to step up, and if you're going to take a position of leadership, show some.
Hong Kong activist Joshua Wong urged supporters to hang on after he was sentenced to more than a year in jail for leading a protest outside police headquarters last year. The sentencing prompted angry cries outside the court in one of the most high-profile cases in the government's crackdown on the pro-democracy movement. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thanks. Just about 5:36 on Wall Street. John Stashower has a Bloomberg sports update.
Thanks, Nathan. Week 12 of the NFL began a week ago with the two games on Thanksgiving. It ends this afternoon with Baltimore at Pittsburgh. Game first scheduled for Thanksgiving night and then postponed three different times due to nine straight days of positive tests by the Ravens. And they just add two more, a seldom-used player and an equipment manager, but the game is on, kicking off at 3:40 this afternoon in Pittsburgh. Will Gary Sanchez remain a Yankee? The deadline is tonight for teams to offer players arbitration or let them become a free agent. The feeling is the Yanks will keep Sanchez, despite his 147 batting average this past season. The Mets have added a reliever. They signed Trevor May, who with Minnesota had 38 strikeouts in 23 innings. The NBA is set to start play in 3 weeks. No schedule yet, though. Reportedly, the new-look Nets will face the Celtics on Christmas. The Nets' new coach is Steve Nash. He's got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving coming back from injuries.
They both are in great states of health, so to speak. They're healthy, in shape, and look great. So that's obviously the best scenario for us after a long layoff for both of them.
Doc Rivers, now the coach in Philadelphia, says he's worried the NBA won't be able to pull off playing games while not in a bubble like it was in this past summer. College basketball last night at an empty Cameron Indoor Stadium. Michigan State beat Duke 75-69. Kansas beat Kentucky 65-62. Dr. Anthony Fauci, asked by Yahoo when stadiums and arenas will be full again, said that will be the last thing to happen. Maybe not until late summer or next fall. John Stashow with Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
All right. Thank you, John. It is 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
The home buying boom in New York suburbs is spreading to the condos. Demand for single-family houses is surging as the pandemic sends city dwellers in search of more space. While competition for a dwindling supply of those properties mounts, more buyers are taking a second look at apartments. Well, Manhattan hasn't had this much available office space since 2003. That's according to a report by Colliers International. The availability rate rose to 13.5% in November, with more companies looking to sublease their offices. The pandemic has emptied out Manhattan offices. Many New York restaurants, shops, and services that cater to a business crowd are hurting. Paul McLaughlin, managing partner of Oceana in Midtown Manhattan, says his restaurant is usually packed with holiday parties and tourists who come to see the tree at Rockefeller Center. This year, business is down, he says, 85 to 90%. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
All right, thanks, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Jeff Bellinger, and on WTVN in Columbus, I'm reporting Columbus-based startup Olive AI is now valued at $1.5 billion after a new round of funding.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise is moving its headquarters from Silicon Valley to the fourth largest city.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the news that the UK has approved the use of the Pfizer-BioNTech virus vaccine.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Ford is among companies urging President-elect Biden to address climate change threats.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Coming up today, we get the first of this week's readings on the labor market ahead of Friday's jobs report at 8:15 a.m. Wall Street time. Payroll provider ADP issues its monthly report on the U.S. labor market, and economists are forecasting businesses added about 430,000 jobs in November. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
Job growth is decidedly split across industries as COVID-19 rages on. Bloomberg Economics says factories are benefiting from the housing boom as well as general inventory building. But services, that's another story, with virus flare-ups and government health orders cutting earnings, airlines and eateries, for example. October's ADP data showed a gain of 365,000 jobs, the smallest since July. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. Also today, the Senate's expected to vote to advance the nomination of Christopher Waller to the Federal Reserve Board. That's likely to lead to his confirmation later this week. Waller is research director at the St. Louis Fed. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has not indicated whether he'll try to revive President Trump's other Fed nominee, Judy Shelton. Her nomination was blocked 2 weeks ago. Equity futures moving lower. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer or call 1-800-FIND-4WD for special offers at the Land Rover Season of Adventure sales event now through January 4th. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are fluctuating while U.S. stock index futures edge lower a day after reaching record highs as optimism over coronavirus vaccines wanes. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 6 points this morning. Dow futures down 94. NASDAQ futures down 14. The DAX in Germany is down 0.33%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 0.91%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.15%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.1% or 5 cents at $44.50 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.8% or $14.50 at $18.33.40 an ounce. The euro 1.2051 against the dollar. British pound 1.3350 and the yen 104.70. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the UK has approved a COVID-19 vaccine with its regulator clearing Pfizer's shot ahead of decisions in the U.S. and European Union. The emergency authorization clears the way for the deployment of a vaccine that Pfizer and its German partner have said is 95% effective. It comes as a CDC independent advisory panel in the U.S. is recommending that states give the first available doses of a COVID-19 vaccine to healthcare workers and seniors who live in long-term care facilities. The Justice Department is investigating a secret scheme to lobby White House officials for a pardon, as well as a related plot to offer a hefty political contribution in exchange for clemency. That's according to a redacted court document unsealed yesterday. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports President Trump has discussed with advisors pardons for his three eldest children and his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. Just about 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. I'm Nathan Hager. We want to take a moment now to dig deeper into one of the biggest tech deals of this soon-to-draw-to-a-close year. Salesforce
is buying the workplace communications platform Slack for $27.7 billion in cash and stock. Dan Ives is with us for more on this, Managing Director and Equity Research Analyst at Wedbush Securities. Great to have you on, Dan. We spoke with Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff after this deal was announced. He's calling it a match made in heaven. How do you see it?
Look, I think it's a game changer as Salesforce is really going after Microsoft. I mean, this is all about the cloud wars, expanding the products, going after Microsoft, two-horse race, Salesforce and Microsoft, and it just speaks to where we are in this evolution of tech cycle.
Is it a good fit for Salesforce's core business, customer relationship management software?
Look, for Salesforce, if you look at their core, they continue to own CRM. But for them, they had to expand outside sales and marketing departments. And I think there's a lot of rationalization and cross-selling that you could get with the Slack acquisition. If you look at Salesforce, they've done significant acquisitions with Tableau and others. The street's going to be a little skeptical, but I view it as a near-term pain for long-term gain. And again, it's all going after Microsoft that continues to pull ahead in the cloud race.
Yeah. So how far is Microsoft ahead in that cloud race, in your view? What does this Salesforce Slack acquisition potentially do to sort of chip away at that lead?
Yeah, I think it does start to chip away, but I think it's going to take time. I mean, Microsoft, I'd say right now is about 12 to 18 months ahead of any other competitor. That's their core backyard. Enterprise workloads, and they're even beating Amazon. Salesforce recognized it was a now or never. And at Benioff, it's hard to argue with any of the moves that he's made over the last decade. So I think this is going to take time, but it's a big enough ocean for more than one boat. I think there's going to be a lot of success stories here. I still view Salesforce and Microsoft are core names to own, you know, here, even though the stock could be in the penalty box in the near term.
Yeah, you mentioned the short-term pain for long-term gain, and we are seeing some modest losses for both Salesforce and Slack in the pre-market. What do you make of the valuation that Salesforce put on Slack? It's a 55% premium on the close before the deal talks were first announced last week.
Yeah, we've seen across tech, especially in COVID, accelerated growth rates by 1-2 years, and valuations at this point, you could talk about their stretch, but we're really entering a golden age of cloud computing. So I think even though they could use stretch relative to historical, it speaks to $1 trillion that we believe is going to be spent over the next decade. And that's why companies are paying up. It's a scarcity value, and that's why Slack is getting bought at this stock price.
Of course, Salesforce's goal, as it's mentioned before, is to generate some pretty big year-over-year returns, more than 25% revenue growth each year. Do you think the Slack acquisition is going to help with that?
Yeah, I think it puts more fuel in the engine there. And it's part of an M&A strategy. If you look at any tech store, take Oracle, you know, over the last, call it 20 years, M&A is key. You got to keep feeding the engine. It's about getting bigger. And that's why right now for Salesforce, it's not about being on a treadmill. It's about going into the right lane, and that's what they're doing with the Salesforce Slack deal.
Only about 30 seconds left here. Dan, do you see any regulatory hurdles to getting this deal over the finish line?
I don't. I don't see any other bidder or regulatory hurdle, just given some antitrust issues that will be minimal here. So I view this as a green light to get the deal done. And I think this is something that's going to be ultimately another chapter of growth for Salesforce on the other side of this.
Dan Ives, Managing Director, Equity Research Analyst at Wedbush Securities. Again, thanks for being with us this morning. Just a quick check of Salesforce shares in the pre-market. Right now, they're down more than 4%. Slack right now is down 1%. Karen?
Nathan, thank you. It's 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
A federal judge in California struck down changes to the H-1B visa program that were made by the Trump administration because of the pandemic's impact on domestic employment. Primary care doctors who rely on office and outpatient visits to manage patients will see pay hikes from Medicare next year. Physicians with fewer office billings will see a drop in reimbursements. And Massachusetts is moving closer to a ban on police use of facial recognition technology.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now another legal story we're watching. The Supreme Court may be ready to limit a broad interpretation of the nation's main anti-hacking law. On Monday, the justices heard arguments about the conviction of a police officer who misused his access to a computer database and whether that could lead to the criminalization of similar actions. For more, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to David Thaw, a professor at the University of Pittsburgh Law School.
Some of the justices gave scenarios, everyday life scenarios, like lying about your weight on a dating app or browsing Instagram on a work computer. What were they getting at there?
A number of those questions were directed at the government, the respondent. And what I think the justices were trying to push at is the question of saying, well, wait a minute, isn't the way you want us, the court, to interpret exceeds authorized access, isn't that a whole lot more than just you're doing something that clearly, obviously, you're not supposed to? Clearly, obviously, you're not supposed to go into the file on the machine that is not for you. Aren't you now getting into things where a private entity can criminalize activities by writing a contract where a dating app could make it criminal? Think about that. Make it a federal crime to lie about your weight for the purpose of getting access to another user's profile, or lie about your age. Making that the subject of federal criminal law is an incredible expansion beyond what Congress originally contemplated.
So taking into account that you can't always tell from the oral arguments, how do you see the court ruling on this?
I did not hear a bench that was very favorable to the government's position. And I think that that's correct from the particular disposition of this case. It's not often that when I hear oral argument for a case, I find myself more persuaded by the justices questioning than I was by the briefs and oral argument by counsel for the parties. But the justices questioning on the point of whether the activity in question was properly criminalized by a broad reading of a federal statute or by the states, which clearly have the power to make the act otherwise criminal. And in this case, I think it was otherwise criminal in Georgia. That was a very compelling argument, and it also fits nicely with an assumption in criminal law that when there is ambiguity in a statute, it is construed in favor of the criminal defendant because we want to do everything possible to give people notice of what the government is telling them not to do by the commands in the criminal law. So if something is ambiguous, we say, well, the Congress should be more clear. And I think that's the direction that the justices seemed to be leaning, was Congress has ample opportunity to make this more clear if they really want it to be this broad.
And that's David Thaw, a professor at the University of Pittsburgh Law School, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcasts. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures down 4 points this morning. Dow futures down 77. NASDAQ futures down 10. And the 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 0.91%, and the yield on the 2-year at 0.15%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.